South Korea's new president calling Pyongyang's weapons program a threat to global security and calls for a denuclearization of the North. Sri Lanka deploys thousands of troops to enforce a nationwide curfew a day after deadly protests over an unprecedented economic crisis. And Iran reports three COVID-related fatalities in the past day, its lowest daily tally since the pandemic started. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Now, top story this hour, South Korean new president wants the neighboring North to be fully denuclearized because its weapons pose a threat to global security, in his words. The newly inaugurated president, Yoon Suk-yeol, says the South is prepared to resolve the threat through dialogue. Now, according to him, Seoul is willing to offer an audacious plan to help boost the economy in North Korea if the country moves toward nuclear disarmament. Yoon made the proposals during his inauguration speech in Seoul. Tensions are high in the Korean Peninsula, with the North starting a new push to advance its nuclear and missile program. Pyongyang says its weapons act as a deterrent against U.S.-led threats in the region. From Seoul, our correspondent Jennifer Chang explains if North Korea is likely to trust the South, given their sour relations and a dismal experience of previous negotiations. Let's take a listen.
The speech today was clearly aimed at getting North Korea to completely and irreversibly denuclearize. And it was attended by a very high-level delegation from the U.S. with the second gentleman, Douglas Emhoff, Vice President Kamala Harris's husband, attending. It's really dismal. The North does not trust South Korea at all, the new president, anymore, because the South Koreans, they elected this new president just by 0.73 percentage points. And this new president, he said that he is going to bring tactical U.S. nuclear weapons to South Korea. That's a threat against North Korea. He also said he would preemptively attack North Korea if he thought North Korea was going to attack first with, say, a hypersonic missile. Well, experts say, how is he going to know that North Korea is going to do a suicidal thing, shooting off a hypersonic missile at South Korea? Many experts say that is not fitting for a presidential candidate to say something like that. He has a lot of controversy surrounding him. He's not even able to reorganize his government.
Sri Lanka in turmoil, fresh protests erupting over the long-running economic crisis, with rallies defying a nationwide curfew imposed after Monday, deadly unrest. Authorities say the highest-ranking police officer in the capital, Colombo, was rushed to the hospital after a mob threw a bomb at him and towards his vehicle. The government now has given emergency powers to the military and the police to detain rioters without warrants. Thousands of troops have also been deployed in Seoul to enforce the curfew. The United Nations has condemned the escalating violence in the island nation.
The High Commissioner said she was deeply troubled by the escalation of violence in Sri Lanka after supporters of the Prime Minister attacked peaceful protesters in Colombo yesterday, the 9th of May, and the subsequent mob violence against members of the ruling party.
The situation remains volatile in Sri Lanka for weeks over raging inflation, power blackouts, and acute shortages of food, fuel, and medicine. Violence flared up on Monday after supporters of Mahinda Rajapaksa, who resigned from premiership this day, clashed with anti-government protesters in Colombo. At least seven people died and nearly 200 wounded in the clashes. Rajapaksa's resignation has failed to calm public anger. The military had to rescue him after the protesters stormed his official residence overnight. Now, crossing over to the Philippines, Manila has become the scene of confrontations between police and protesters opposed to the presidential election results. Now, demonstrators gathered outside the election commission claiming irregularities in the polls. Initial results indicate that the son of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos has won by a landslide. With over 95% of the ballots counted, the 64-year-old candidate has garnered almost 30 million ballots, more than double that of his nearest rival, Vice President Lenny Robredo. Official results are expected toward the end of this month. 10 candidates have entered a race to succeed President Rodrigo Duterte. In other news, Iran has reported only 3 COVID-related fatalities over the past day. That's the lowest daily tally since the beginning of the pandemic. According to the health ministry, out of the total of 31 provinces, only Tehran and Alborz reported new deaths. Iran has largely contained COVID thanks to a mass vaccination program. Around 70% of the population has received 2 doses of a vaccine. Some 32% have received a 3rd shot as well. The government opened schools and universities last month after more than 2 years. More than a year since Israel's war in the Gaza Strip, Tel Aviv is going down the same path that has sparked the conflict. Meantime, there has been no progress in addressing the problems lingering between the two sides, such as Judaization of Al-Quds and the Palestinians' right to worship at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Now, that's while Israel continues with illegal acts like administrative detentions and home demolitions, angering Palestinians even further.
On May 10, 2021, Israel began an offensive on the Gaza Strip that went on for 11 days. The regime razed several buildings in the meantime, including a tower housing the bureaus of several news outlets, including Al Jazeera's. The bombings killed over 250 Palestinians in the besieged enclave, including dozens of women and children. But this time, unlike other incidents where Israel launched attacks on the Strip, Palestinian resistance movements struck back hard, killing at least 12 Israelis.
We have to remember that while there have been deaths on both sides, the deaths of Palestinians far outnumber those of the Israelis, probably by close to 1,000 to 1. So there is not a lot of importance given to Palestinian lives. This has been an ongoing, long-standing policy of the world. It's completely unjust. It ignores international law and human rights, but this has been the case. But any efforts to bring rights to the Palestinians, rights that they are entitled to by international law simply because they live, because they exist, will be opposed because no other country wants to risk its economic ties with Israel.
The conflict had been in the making for several weeks prior, when Israeli troops intensified their crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied Al-Quds during the holy Muslim month of Ramadan. The protests that had erupted at the regime's attempt to evict several families from the East Al-Quds neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah also escalated the tensions. The devastating conflict ended in an Egypt-brokered ceasefire that went into effect on May 21st. The battle, however, significantly altered the perceptions about the military capabilities of Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups.
Now, during last year's 11-day Gaza war, Palestinian groups launched some 3,000 rockets at Israeli cities, and that was why higher the number of rockets Lebanon's Hezbollah fired at Israel during the 2006 and 2019 confrontations. Now, it proved that, unlike Israel's claims, the so-called Iron Dome missile system is not impregnable. Now, add to that the recent resistance operations in Aden, Tel Aviv, and it appears that Israeli security forces are at their weakest.
The 2021 confrontation is widely hailed as a victory for Hamas and other resistance movements in Gaza, not only militarily and on the ground, but also morally on an international level. Demonstrations in solidarity with the Palestinians in Gaza and the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood were held across the world. A wider and more diverse group of people around the globe called for an end to the conflict and Israel's aggression, which helped raise awareness about the plight of Palestinians to a much higher extent.
Israeli invisibility can mean a number of things. You're referring to militarily, but there's also the invincibility that it had for so many years as being seen as the victim, the innocent victim just trying to defend itself. That has certainly been shattered. People around the world, even if they support Israel, see Israel as the aggressor.
A year on, Tel Aviv is once again intensifying the pressure on the Palestinians. Israeli forces and settlers have repeatedly raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound over the past few weeks, a location that's considered Islam's 3rd holiest site. In response, there has been a spike in the number of deadly Palestinian retaliatory operations across the occupied territories. Palestinians say the attacks are a natural response to Israel's desecration of Al-Aqsa, an issue they warn is their red line. The mounting tensions between Palestinians and Israelis are raising fears about another confrontation. But the events over the past couple of years have indicated that Palestinians will continue to fight for what they believe in and that they can inflict pain on the other side, too.
At least 30 more people are displaced as the Israeli regime demolishes another Palestinian home in the occupied East Al-Quds. Police cordoned off the area around the three-story building in the Silwan neighborhood before razing it to the ground. The Red Crescent says five Palestinians were also beaten and injured by Israeli forces, one of them critically. Israeli officials ordered the destruction, citing a lack of construction permit, and that's the usual excuse for the demolition, as Palestinians' requests for such permits are always turned down. And this as Israel's pushing ahead with a settlement construction on occupied Palestinian land, a move that's seen as illegal under international law. The social media is filled with angry reactions to a recent Israeli decision to build 4,000 new settler units in the occupied Palestinian territories. Hashtag Training is next with a quick review of the comments by social media users.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, your host Ali Reza. The construction of Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories has long been a source of major dispute. The regime has constantly been expanding its settlement projects despite the international outcry against the move. The move, which, if it needs to be said, is illegal under international law. In another act of aggression against the Palestinians, Israeli authorities have approved a plan to construct 4,000 new settlement units in the occupied Palestinian territories. And in order to do that, they will have to demolish 12 Palestinian villages and deport more than 1,300 Palestinians from their home. Activists and social media users are now calling for an international boycott of Israel in a bid to stop its crimes against the Palestinians. They say that the regime's expansion of its settlements constructions in violation of international law is meant to ensure that there will be no Palestinian state. Our first tweet of the day comes from Ala Iman. Israel is a brutal military occupation whose goal is to steal more land by military force to establish illegal settlements on Palestinian land. It is time to boycott them completely and stop their crimes against the Palestinian people. Here we have our next tweet. It's written by Doki Doki Cloud. Daily reminder that Israel keeps violating international law by continuously building their illegal settlements. These despicable settlers were brought here from some countries in Europe, and look what they keep spouting, and the IDF military allows it. Emma DM has our next tweet. For Israel, settlements have two main functions: to ensure that the occupied territories remain under constant and perpetual control of Israel, and to ensure that there will never be a Palestinian state. Meanwhile, the Geneva Council of Rights and Freedom says that Israel's expulsion of Palestinians from their homes and the seizure and transfer of their land to settlers amount to forced displacement and are tantamount to a war crime. Our next tweet comes from Jane Samuels. She said, deportation of over 1,000 people in favor of expanding settlements, outposts, and training of Israeli soldiers is not only a humanitarian catastrophe, it's a clear step in de facto annexation of occupied Palestinian territories. And over here we have a picture of the occupation over the years posted by Eugenie. Is this making peace? Make peace for Israel was always just calm, continued occupation. Peace was just capitulation in disguise. Israel has zero credibility today, pretending that they never wanted settlements, but they magically happen. And you can see the progression of this occupation since 1946 to 1947, 67, and 2012, and like a lot more of this happened since 2012. This is just a rather old of the occupation. Hazel Sharat said, 80% of the Israeli settlement's waste is dumped on occupied Palestinian territory. 97% of drinking water in Gaza is unfit for consumption. Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine has weaponized the environment, and AXA, it's an investment group, is complicit. Divest from Israeli apartheid now. That's been it for this edition of Hashtag Trending. Many thanks. Let's head back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
The Kuwaiti Crown Prince has finally accepted the resignation of Prime Minister Sabah Khalid al-Sabah's government. Mashal al-Ahmad al-Sabah has asked the government to stay on in a caretaker capacity in a decree on behalf of the emir. The decree has not given any timeline for the formation of a new government. Khalid al-Sabah handed in the resignation of his cabinet on April 5th amid a dispute with Parliament and a day before a no-confidence vote against him. Lawmakers accuse the Sheikh Sabah's government of unconstitutional practices and corruption. The lengthy political feud has hindered fiscal reforms in the oil-rich Persian Gulf sheikdom. This has also prolonged the country's financial stagnation and hampered efforts to relieve economic stress in the OPEC member state. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Insight.
Welcome to Insight. On this episode, we will be discussing the current crisis in the global economic and financial system with Russian economist Sergei Glazyev. But first, this brief analysis.
Even before the war in Ukraine and the severe Western sanctions imposed on Russia, the global economic and financial system was entering a period of transition. Changes in the relative economic power of nations, particularly those of rising powers in Asia, began to challenge America's global financial and economic hegemony. In the US itself, more than 20 years of permanent global war in the name of fighting terrorism has financially, politically, and morally corrupted America. The financialization of the U.S. economy destroyed U.S. production and has created one of the greatest wealth gaps in history, with tens of millions of Americans living in poverty and hunger, and a handful of oligarchs with unfathomable wealth wasting it on personal pet projects. More than ever before in recent history, the United States is weaponizing economic sanctions, the global banking system, and the US dollar itself to wage economic war against whatever country that is not complying with its orders. This, in turn, is destroying the credibility of the very global financial system that the United States imposed on the world following World War II. The severe sanctions imposed on Russia by the West have exacerbated this larger historic transition, because, for the first time, the majority of non-Western nations did not comply with Western orders to sanction Russia. And Europe is also suddenly faced with a severe crisis because of its dependency on Russian energy and raw materials. For the first time, there are serious efforts to replace the US dollar as the international trade currency, as well as efforts to create new international financial systems independent of the West. New systems which cannot be abused and weaponized by the West to wage economic war on peoples around the world. It's not yet clear how these new global economic and financial systems will look like, but what is clear is that they will be centered in Asia and will be very different than what existed previously.
Dr. Glazyev, thank you so much for joining us on Insight. Doctor, you know, it's interesting because you wrote, prior to the Ukraine conflict, you wrote in your books, in your articles, about particular trends
that were already occurring in the global economic and financial situation of the world. Things like weaponization of the dollar, things like using and abusing the banking system, that is the Western banking system that is dominated by the West, for political ends, for punishing countries. A lot of these other issues, which are very many, which we can't all list now in our conversation. And you were at that time already predicting that the current financial system in the world, the current economic banking system in the world, is going to change, and that we're going to be going through a transition. And of course, all of this was accelerated by the Ukrainian conflict and the reaction that the West showed to Russia, the sanctioning, the basically stealing of Russian foreign reserves in foreign banks, something that, of course, we as Iranians are very used to. This is nothing new for us. And we welcome you to the club now. So if you could please explain for our audience in as much detail as possible, what is the current global financial situation dominated by the West that is now coming to an end? Some of the main features of it, some of those main issues as to this current situation, and how is it that we are now transitioning away from this current system and into a new system?
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. I shall try to explain the current situation from the viewpoint of the theory of long-term economic development. I am an expert in this long-term cycles theory, and the present situation is a situation of transition. The world is changing dramatically. It changes both technologically and institutionally. This time we are going through two transitions. The first transition is technological revolution, the transition to the new technological mode, which means that the economy is suffering from the drastic changes in the technological structure. Each technological structure is the basis for the so-called Kondratiev long wave.
Yes.
These cycles have 50 years length, and every 50 years we have approximately technological revolution. This period is a period of depression in the economy, because the companies, especially in the developed countries, are suffering from the excess of capital in the obsolete industries. Mm-hmm. And it takes time to transfer capital from the obsolete industries to the new one. This transition started about 15 years ago, and now it is coming to the end. The new technological mode, which is based on nanotechnologies, information technologies, digital technologies, biotechnologies, bioengineering technologies, and now is formed, and its expansion is going on the with the accelerated growth. The growth rate of this new technologies is about 35% per year. At the same time, we are going through the institutional change. Changes are taking place with much more longer periods. The Italian scholar and banker Arrighi studied the so-called long-term cycles, or he called this century cycles, systemic cycles of capital accumulations. And each such cycle is based on the specific institutional structure. For instance, during the last two centuries, we have seen the changes from the colonial type of economy, which was based on the huge world powers in Europe, British Empire, colonial empire, French Empire, Russian Empire, and so forth. Those colonial period of capital accumulation is more or less have more or less good explanations given by Marx. Mm-hmm. He showed in his papers that the main feature of this kind of economic structure is conflict, antagonistic conflict between labor and capital. This colonial period was characterized by the slave trade, by the exploitation of all over the world by the European empires, and there were no any social rights, no trade unions, nothing which could protect workers from the exploitations from the capital, capitalists. This colonial type structure collapsed in the beginning of the 20th century. The First World War and the Second World War were provoked by the British in order to maintain the British Empire as a leader of the world. The point is that this transition period from one cycle to the another cycle usually is going on through the world wars because the ruling elite of the leading countries do not want any changes. And at that time, 100 years ago, we have seen two world wars. Both were provoked and organized by British, and the Second World War also by the Americans, who made a huge investments in militarization on German Empire. And the idea of these two wars designed by the British was to have a conflict between Russia and Germany in order to prevent their development. At the beginning of the 20th century, Germany and Russian Empire together were in very close relations. And they produced more goods and they were more advanced. They had faster growth rates than British Empire. And it was quite clear that Russian and German Empire together with Austrian Empire and Ottoman Empire becomes a new center of the world. In order to prevent this formation of the new center of the world, British provoked the First World War, which destroyed all those empires, and Europe was also destroyed, and British maintained their world leadership till the Second World War. But at the same time, we have seen the Russian Socialist Revolution and the emergency of the principally new institutional structure. It was a structure based on the central planning economy, which was very new and which demonstrated a huge growth rates. The industrialization and growth rates of not only of industrial production, but of the whole economy in the Soviet Russia was the highest in the world at that time. At the same time, in the United States, another type of this new institutional structure also emerged based on the transnational corporations. From the organizational point of view, the Soviet system and the American system were rather similar. The basic unit in the organizational structure was large corporation. In the Soviet Union, it was called ministries, which organized production in this or that industries. In the Western world, they were transnational corporations. For the first time in the history, the governments invented the fiat money, which were used in endless scale. Mm-hmm. The government, the central banks, government central banks, started to print money in those quantities which were necessary to finance investments for economic development. For the first time, we have seen that the monetary limits were overcome. There were no any problems for the finance industrialization in the Soviet Union because the state bank printed as much money as were necessary to finance the growth of productions and investments. The only limits were physical resources. At the same time, in the United States, the Federal Reserve emerged, and Federal Reserves also started to print money in those quantities which were necessary for the American government to finance its budget, and to stimulate economic growth. These two principally new, but politically opposite systems, they were common in the way of organization of production, but they were opposite in the political sense. In America, we have seen democracy, in Russia, communist totalitarian state. In spite of the political antagonism, those two systems demonstrated very fast growth, especially the Soviet systems, which didn't suffer from the Great Depression. The Great Britain started to lose its hegemony again. And again, they started to provoke the New World War, again, between Russia, between Soviet Union and Germany. Finally, the war finished with the political results, which was very astonishing for the British, because the British lost the empire, in spite of the fact that they were among the winners. They lost empire because the two superpowers emerged, the Soviet Union and United States, which were much more efficient than the British colonial type state.
That's right.
These large scale corporations and ministries organized production, mass production, in much more efficient way than have been done by the private companies in the British Empire. So British Empire collapsed the so-called imperial, as we define it, imperial world order began, dominated by the two superpowers. Now this cycle comes to the end. Mm-hmm. First, we have seen the collapse of the Soviet Union about 30 years ago.
Yes.
Now we are looking for the collapse of the United States. The Soviet Union collapsed because the central planning economy was very rigid, and it didn't satisfy for the needs of the science and technological progress. This was very a bureaucratic system which reject innovations. And finally, the Soviet Union began to go down in technological competition. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the United States becomes the only one leader. But this leadership was not forever, because the American system today is based on the creation of the fiat capital, which has no limits. You see, according to the Arrighi studies, each one-century cycle of the accumulation of capital has two phases. The first phase is material expansion. The new system of management, the new, more efficient institutions give opportunity for those countries which use these institutions to become the leaders in the industrial production, in the real sector. But after two generations, the leadership in industrial sector transfers to the leadership in the financial sector. Mm-hmm. And the second half of this century is the financial expansions. Financial expansion of American capital now have such a scale that the efficiency in the real sector simply doesn't matter. During the last 10 years, maybe 12 years, the amount of dollars in the world economy increased about four times. At the same time, we see that in China and in India emerge the new technology, a new economic system, which have much more complicated structure, which combine the central strategic planning with the market competition mechanism. The government control the money circulation through the government, through the state banking system. And at the same time, the private entrepreneurs, the private companies has access to the endless credit facilities, but they get this access only in those spheres which increase the production of the goods which have consumer demand. So this combination of central strategic planning and private markets and companies' competition gives new opportunities for the economic growth. The government creates, the central bank, government central bank create money. The government controls the circulation of this money. It's do in such a way to avoid the speculations. They give opportunity to the private companies have a long-term credits, maybe half, 0.5 interest rate, even 0.2 interest rates, which are provided by the government banks for those companies which are able to produce more goods and give more opportunities for economic growth. And the government at the same time block the speculations which undermine the economic stability. For this reason, almost all money which are created by the state are going to the real sector. Mm-hmm. And today we see that monetization of the Chinese economy about two times higher than American economies. Almost the amount of money which were created by the Chinese state bank during the last 12 years increased about three times. But this money was not going to the financial speculations as in the United States. It was going to the production sector. And we see that Chinese corporations like Huawei, let's say, or Xiaomi, or China Construction, or Power Engineering Company, becomes the huge built corporations. They were created, especially in private sector, like Huawei or Xiaomi, they were created just from nothing, from private cooperatives, which are growing up very fast because the government support these companies with the cheap credits. But at the same time, the government control with the use of the money. It's avoid the capital flight. The currency control is very strong. The yuan, RMB, is convertible only for current transactions for trade, but it's not convertible for the capital transactions. The capital flows are controlled by the government. And all this monetary mechanism is designed in such a way to promote investments. You see, the Chinese, as well as Indian and maybe Iranian financial system, has a clear goal to finance, first of all, new investments, to finance the growth of production, which is quite different from the American and Western system, where the money are created for the needs of the financial oligarchs. They print money in huge quantities without taking care where this money are going. The main idea to get super profits. For this reason, they create various derivatives, which in fact are pure speculative instruments. And these financial bubbles concentrate about 80% of the whole money created by the Federal Reserves. And the mechanism which we see at the moment in the West, financial mechanism, is going through the turbulence. It becomes very turbulent. Every 10 years, we have the financial crisis. And there is completely, almost no economic growth. There is no growth of the real income of the population. So American and European economy is in stagnation. At the same time, the Chinese and Indian economies are growing up very fast. So the world economy is switched to the new center in the South East Asia. We see the new world economic center, which dominates now in the world economy by the growth rates. More than 50% of the growth of the world economy is the growth in those Asian countries. This center is much more efficient. It wins economic competition. And the Pax Americana is going to the end. Not because Chinese and Indian economies are growing up so fast, not because they were in miserable situation before. they're growing up very fast because they have much more efficient system of management, much more efficient institutional system. So this new type of economic organization combines the central planning for strategic central strategic planning and private entrepreneurs. We call this type of state as integrated, integrative state, or integrated world economic mode, because the main function of the state is the combination of the interests, the harmonization of the interests of various social groups. The American style system is designed for the needs of the financial oligarchy.
Exactly.
The American system protects property rights for the large capital, and they don't care about the workers, about the population as a whole. And for this reason, we see the huge social differentiation, which finally go into the political destabilization, which we have seen during the last presidential elections in the United States.
Exactly.
As for the new type of the state in Asia, we see the socialist ideology. We see the huge role of the moral standards. The state is responsible before the people. The main idea of the economic policy is the growth of the incomes and living standards of the population. So this combination of the socialist ideology, of the traditional values, of market mechanism and central strategic planning, government control over the money creation, shows the huge efficiency, and it is no doubt that the last part of the present century will be dominated by the competition between China and India. Unfortunately, cost about 100 million people killed in the two world wars organized by the British Empire. And now the American financial and ruling elite is trying to maintain its leadership, starting the new world war. We call this war hybrid war, because the main front lines in this war are going in the financial sector, in the economic and trade sector, in information technologies, and only the final stage, they use the military power in order to press opposition and in order to finalize the expansion in the financial and economic and information sectors. But this is the real world war, because the idea of this world war, hybrid world war, is from the American side, is to maintain its world hegemony. And they don't care about other countries. Those countries which are not controlled by the United States are going through the culture, through the color revolutions. Exactly. The Americans are trying to undermine political stability. In those countries which they do not have control, they introduce various methods for chaotization of those countries. They provoke wars between countries. The main idea of them was to provoke the war between Russia and China. Fortunately, it didn't happen. Now the Russia and China have strategic partnership. And because the China is too large now, and American lose the economic competition with China, they're trying now to press Russia, to undermine Russia, to destroy Russia, in order to improve its position in the world by means of controlling the Russia natural resources and to prevent the growth of China. So American plan today has three stages. The first one, to destroy Russia, because, the Russophobia is one of the long-term, have deep roots in Anglo-Saxon geopolitics.
Exactly.
The whole geopolitics theory of the 19th century, designed by the English and Germans, was some quasi-science how to destroy the Russian Empire. It was their main headache of the Western geopoliticians to find methods how to destroy the Russian empire. And the Ukrainian crisis, the war today in Ukraine, happened according to the recommendations of their geopolitical theory, starting from Bismarck and then following with Brzezinski. They stressed a lot of times that in order to destroy Russia, first of all, you have to get away Ukraine from Russia, because the formula of Brzezinski was that Russia without Ukraine couldn't be the superpower. And all this Russophobia, which was have deep roots in the Anglo-Saxon geopolitics, now played a key role. Why the United States use Russia as the main goal, to maintain the world hegemony. And Ukrainian provocation was prepared on the systemic basis during the 20 years, especially the last 8 years. They trying to control Ukraine. As you know, they organized the coup d'etat in Ukraine. The Ukraine during the last 8 years do not have independent government. This territory is totally controlled by the CIA and other American and British organizations. And the first stage for them is of this hybrid war. In fact, hybrid war began with the sanctions against Russia in 2014. And then the second stage was the economic war with China, where the American used the same methods as the British Empire used in the 30s, when British Empire prevented the access of American goods to their empire in order to get more compatible position in comparison with the United States. Now the United States did the same. They launched the trade war with China in order to maintain their markets and in order to limit the growth of China. But they failed in this war.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time on Insight.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah.
Today, almost all propaganda operations in the mass media run by Eastern and Western blacks write or speak against the Islamic Republic. The reason is clear. The Islamic Republic plans to preserve its independence and curtail the hands of world devourers and their affiliates from this country. The Islamic Republic wishes all Islamic countries and all the governments dominating Islamic countries to wake up from their deep slumber.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Islam and our deeds. In his speech, Imam Khomeini has said that it is our duty today to be ready to withstand and endure any pain in our opposition to dangers that threaten Islam and the Muslims. This is necessary for severing the hands of the traitors to Islam and for checking their enmities and desires. Now, this is an important part of the speech where Imam Khomeini is saying that obviously when we are the Muslims and when we are following the Islam, we know that there are many enemies out there. The first of them is obviously Shaitan itself. The first of them is Satan. And the other satanic powers, obviously we know that in the Quran Allah has said that this Satan, it can be from the jinns or the ins, from the man and the jinns. So we have both of them as satanic powers. So we need to endure any pain in our opposition to dangers that threatens Islam. So we need to endure this pain. And if we have patience upon this pain, if we have patience upon these oppositions that we have and the threats that we have for Islam, obviously we will be succeeded. And on the other hand, we need to take care of the traitors, that we should not allow them to threaten us. We should not allow them to put Islam in danger and to put the Muslim Ummah in danger. Therefore, we must endure the pain. We must endure the opposition that is coming from the enemies. And we know that because Islam is the true religion and because Islam is the only and only way of the success of the people, it gives success to the people, it gives the success to the nations, and it will save the mankind and humanity. Therefore, we must protect it. And if there is any pain in this path, in this struggle that we are doing, we must become patient. We must show patience in this path. Therefore, we have verses that those who struggle in the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and they are patient, Allah has prepared the paradise for them. There are good rewards for them, inshallah. Ya Rabbana, salli ala. صلى الله عليه يا رسول الله
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.